Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, May 1st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. McDonald's sees its largest same-store sales decline in 5 years, while Subway is closing stores at an accelerating rate. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, stocks surge on Wall Street as strong earnings from tech giants like Microsoft and Meta reignite the AI trade. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And let's begin with the earnings report for Meta for a variety of reasons, starting with the fact that it makes your stock pick from several weeks ago seem very prescient. Meta platforms jumping 6% on an earnings beat, citing advertising resilience. And you were saying a couple of weeks ago that with that market downturn, some high flyers were basically on sale as far as the stock was concerned, and that seemed to be the right bet.
Well, good afternoon, Rob, and thanks for the for having me on, and thanks for the little plug there. Yeah, Meta's been a pick of ours on your show multiple times, and for good reason. It's our second largest equity holding. We just think that it was on sale, as you'd said, in this last month. And, you know, when you get dislocation, when you get big market moves down, there's a lot of stocks that stay down. But there's also some disconnections or dislocations and some stocks that are punished for no reason. Meta's one of them. So we scooped more a couple weeks ago, and we love the stock. We think it's going to make a move to 700 this year. It's up 5% to about 575 today on great earnings. They beat on top and bottom line. They crushed their earnings, 643 versus 528. That was incredible. And the stock overall is just a horse. It's our second biggest holding, as I said. It's increasing its spending in CapEx, which is going to help other companies like NVIDIA, but it's also going to help them grow. So we love the stock, and they did great on earnings today.
And in this era of uncertainty, a lot of other companies pulling their guidance for 2025, Facebook, though, or Meta, I should say, it appears that the advertising climate or their advertising spend is resilient in the face of a lot of these tariff uncertainties.
Yeah, they've actually reaffirmed their advertising revenue, and they've also increased their CapEx guidance, which that's surprising. And I think that's the thing that has caused the stock to pop the most. They raised their guidance in CapEx to a $68 billion spend from about $62 billion that was expected beforehand. So not only is that helping that stock, but it's helping NVIDIA, AMD, Arista, Vertiv, all these stocks that are AI plays, because it appears that Meta is going to actually increase their spending, unlike Microsoft, which we can go into as well. But Meta is actually growing their spending in a time when people were very afraid that they're actually going to be decreasing their spending.
And I want to touch on Microsoft very quickly. Also a strong earnings report in the first quarter with their cloud computing revenue leading the way.
Yeah, cloud revenue is a big deal for Microsoft. They're still, them and Amazon are crushing it in the cloud space. They had $70 billion in revenue versus 68 expected, and their earnings were 346 versus 321. I mean, that's a good beat, but really it's just a sigh of relief. These two tech juggernauts are really the face of the NASDAQ. And you know, when you come with two reports as good as these, and Microsoft, their spending for CapEx, they're saying is about going to be about flat versus expectations. But even that is good news, because everybody's afraid that the growth is going to actually become negative, and these reports are saying not at all, and that the tariffs are having almost no effect on cloud and AI spending. So if Microsoft and Meta are like the rest of the companies in the space, it looks like things are a lot better than I think the market had anticipated.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
McDonald's posts its steepest U.S. sales drop in 2020, while Subway shutters hundreds of locations, signaling challenges and shifting dynamics across the fast food industry. We welcome in Jim Solera, research analyst with Stephens in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And in our previous segment, we were talking about how big tech, at least two of the big tech giants, Meta and Microsoft, seem to be powering over all of this tariff uncertainty. But when you look at the quick service restaurant space, which is where a lot of consumer discretionary spending takes place, is this potentially a troubling sign for the economy?
Yeah, so thanks for having us on. And what's interesting is you haven't actually seen, you know, a material change in the position of the consumer. So, you know, wages are still up, inflation is still going in the right direction. But you see a lot of what we refer to as economic anxiety. And so particularly among like lower and middle income consumers, there's this tendency right now to just kind of take a wait and see approach. And if you don't have something that you need to spend money on, you want to wait and see what things are going to cost over the coming months. And so to your point, you know, McDonald's called out slower traffic and negative traffic among lower income and middle income consumers. You saw the same thing at Chipotle last week. And so I think what you're seeing is not so much an actual impact on consumer wallets, but just more uncertainty, and that uncertainty causing them to, you know, take a pause and kind of reevaluate what they need to spend money on.
Same-store sales shrinking 3.6% during the first quarter. That was the worst since the 8.7% plunge during the second quarter of 2020. And of course, that was when everything shut down as COVID-19 slammed ashore. Also, in the quick-service restaurant space, Subway is closing stores at an alarming rate. Subway lost 631 restaurants last year, and that's out of 19,000 in the entire country. But that's the first time it's been below 20,000 stores in quite some time. And I feel like there's some unique attributes of the Subway franchise model that leads to the number of Subways growing at a rapid rate and contracting at a rapid rate.
Yeah, so I think Subway's interesting to your point. I mean, it is the largest restaurant chain in the United States. So, you know, 600 restaurants sounds like a lot, but against the backdrop of 20,000, I mean, it's a smaller impact. I think you've also seen a lot of competition in that quick service space. You know, everyone knows Chipotle, but if you just think about in, you know, recent time, Wingstop has grown a lot. You've seen Sweetgreen, Cava, a lot of these newer concepts emerge and attract new customers. And so I think with Subway, you know, it's an established brand, but consumers are always looking for the next new thing. And I think it's important to kind of keep the brand fresh and top of mind and have innovations on the menu to engage with the consumer. And you just see a lot of restaurants in QSR that are kind of bringing new concepts and new menus to offer consumers. And so I think what you're seeing with Subway is just, you know, rebalancing where they're at. Maybe there's some areas where they had lower performing stores and just kind of optimizing that store base and getting into a position where they could be primed for growth.
And even as far as franchises are concerned, I seem to recall that Subway was one of the easier franchises to get into. So if you're having a hard time, if it's easy to get into a Subway franchise, it's probably just as easy to get out of it.
Yeah, and look, you know, because the brand's been around for a while, you also will have franchisees that have run their restaurant for a long time. They've probably made good money. You know, they've more than paid back whatever the initial cost was. And maybe they're at a point where they want to retire and, you know, there isn't somebody that's ready to step in and take over operating the restaurant. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can impact opening and closing when you have a big franchisee network like Subway.
Jim Salera, research analyst with Stephens in Cleveland, Ohio. Thank you for joining us today, talking about the latest in the quick service restaurant space at McDonald's and Subway. Coming up next, American Airlines adding more warm weather destinations to its winter schedule.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
American Airlines will add a host of new winter routes from O'Hare, expanding service to vacation spots despite broader industry cutbacks. Joining us with the details is Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And American is beefing up its presence at O'Hare. It is offering more service to more warm weather destinations during the winter months. And how does this position American in its fight over market share and over gate share at O'Hare against United?
Oh yeah, what a difference a half year makes. I mean, we thought, you know, earlier in 2024 they were going to, you know, be flat at O'Hare, perhaps even downsized, and they're coming out swinging. They're really expanding O'Hare. We have these seven new routes they added, which are many of them taking on United head to head to warm weather spots in the Caribbean. But they're making statements like, you know, this is Chicago's number one airline and so forth. So they're ready to come out swinging to defend that market share.
And this is after boosting its summer schedule by 22%. So this is it's a big bet on Chicago.
It is. And, you know, international has been a little sluggish over here, but we're seeing a lot of action lately. You know, some of the new routes, Guatemala City, St. Croix, St. Martin. So they're really focusing on a lot of these, you know, leisure markets that have a lot of energy in the post-pandemic world. And they're running pretty big planes to these. So a lot of seats are up. And, you know, O'Hare is making quite a comeback after, you know, not keeping pace with some other airports on new flights post-pandemic. It's been a couple of good weeks.
And it's all the through line that I notice here, Curaçao, St. Croix, St. Martin. I am a veteran of an American Airlines flight to St. Martin. That normally these are flights that if you wanted to go there, you have to go to Miami and change planes and then do that whole custom situation coming back through Miami to get to Chicago. So that avoids that Miami stopover.
It sure does. And, you know, those are sometimes hard routes to make work from Chicago because, you know, O'Hare's a big hub. But most of the traffic that connects, you know, is south of Chicago. So for many people, say from Kansas City, Chicago is not the most direct route to those locations. So they're feeling pretty good, not only about the hub, but about the strength of the local market of Chicagoans that want to travel. And we're all seeing some smaller markets in the mix, service to Roanoke and Akron Canton, and just boosted frequency in general. So this gate battle over here is going to enter a new phase right now.
And how does this square with the segment we did earlier about how domestic air travel demand appeared to be slowing down? I mean, obviously, if you're going to St. Martin, you're going to another country. But if people are pulling back on domestic travel, wouldn't it stand to reason that they would pull back on potentially a warm weather getaway at the wintertime?
That's certainly the domestic market is a bit sluggish right now, and we're seeing most of these new routes are leisure destinations, which have been very strong. But the kind of the short hop, non-leisure markets, we're seeing kind of a weakening as consumers get nervous about a possible recession. It hasn't been dramatic, but airlines are just sort of watching cautiously at that. I will say that O'Hara stands out for airlines being quite bullish, despite the, you know, the economic clouds overhead.
That's Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute in Chicago at DePaul University. Thank you for joining us today.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. It's May 1st. The markets are higher. Whatever happened to sell in May and go away?
Well, would you know that we have a new bull market in the NASDAQ on an intraday basis, and that the S&P 500 is up 17%? From the lows on an intraday basis. So a lot of us, a lot to celebrate. We would be going for 8 days in a row up for the S&P 500. Tomorrow, of course, we have a critical jobs report. So we'll probably hammer right here and see what happens with the report tomorrow. 9 days in a row is an extremely unusual event. So we'll see what happens.
And this is just key. Is this keying off entirely of the Meta and Microsoft earnings reports? Or is it just once again, traders choosing to be optimistic?
Well, those are incredible. And people don't realize earnings have been great all along, as have been most of the economic reports. So earnings are going to be up 13% year over year this quarter so far. That's beyond expectations. The move in Microsoft is like nearly historic. $300 billion in market cap added. A gap for our largest $3 trillion company to gap up 10% is incredible. So we were really surprised, you know, obviously during the tariff turmoil that we had, investors or hedge funds really were selling the growth companies, but that's where all the growth has been. So these companies have been delivering, you know, Facebook, Meta, Microsoft, really good, but that's done now. We sort of know where these earnings are going to land. Obviously, we have Apple coming up as well, and then the jobs report tomorrow.
Now, the jobs report coming out tomorrow, and this was almost lost in the shuffle yesterday. This comes on the heels of the private payroll report, the ADP report, coming in well below expectations. And I know it's different methodology, and often the numbers are quite divergent on a monthly basis. But with you have that plus the first-time unemployment benefits shooting up, what are we feeling about tomorrow?
Well, it's really got to thread the needle. The expectations are 133,000 jobs. If it hits that number, I would suspect the market's going to rise because that will instill some confidence that, you know, all the distortions from the trade war, okay, you know, we got a chance to negotiate with China and, you know, the Grinch is not going to steal Christmas, right? You know, so that would be good. A weak jobs report would not be good tomorrow. I think technically we would hold, but I would suspect the market would be down on heavy profit taking with a jobs report under 100,000. However, on the flip side of that, interest rates have really cooled down. So I would suspect yields would fall yet again in expectations of the Fed cutting interest rates.
And then, of course, we had that first quarter GDP read. And, of course, it's the first of several estimates of economic activity, but a contraction by 0.3% on an annualized basis. And it seems like the reaction universally from everybody to that is, yeah, but.
Well, you know, it was, you know, we've had just day after day of reversals. And yesterday was extremely significant. Obviously, the knee-jerk reaction was to sell, but when you strip out the tariff, you know, front-loading and kind of parse it out, I still haven't completely come out with what I believe. But the underlying GDP, when you strip out the distortions, was still positive, maybe 1% or so. That actually, on revisions, will come through a little bit. Obviously, trade war conflict is not great for the market. So, you know, any kind of easing of tensions once we get through the earnings reports tonight, the jobs report, we're going to need to see some concrete rollback of some of these tit-for-tat tariffs between the U.S. and China, I think, for further progress in the market.
Matt Shapiro, President, NWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, the growth of artificial intelligence raises major questions about the reliability of internet content.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. Artificial intelligence is flooding the internet with fakes, and a new iris scanning orb aims to restore trust by verifying users and real humans and not bots. Joining us with the latest on this rapidly evolving situation is Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder and editor-in-chief of Techish.com, based in Seattle. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. Now, I saw something yesterday that was truly remarkable. It was a video that showed President Trump meeting with various species of aliens. It was remarkably realistic. Now, are you telling me, Jennifer, that that was not real and that the president was not receiving some sort of mysterious crystal from the Greys? I learned all about them from Art Bell.
Yeah. You just never know these days. But here's the thing. Within 1 year from today, as much as 90% of everything you see online could be generated by artificial intelligence. That means we have no way to actually know what's real anymore online, from the president talking with aliens, the people you talk to, shop with, flirt with, vote for, trust, your news people like you and me. Right now, the only way that we have to prove that someone's human are either invasive or super annoying things like CAPTCHAs or handing over private data like your phone number or your ID. Enter a company called Tools for Humanity. This is co-founded and co-run by OpenAI's Sam Altman. And this product that they unveiled last night here in the United States called the Orb. Now, how to best describe it? It's a bold new attempt to verify that you are not a bot, that thing that you're watching was not created by AI, but rather a human. And you do that by looking this orb in the eye. It scans your face, most notably your iris, which is more unique than even your fingerprint, to verify that you're a human. And then it sends that world ID to an app on your phone. And I'm sure you're thinking, huh, what could possibly go wrong?
Well, you do mention in previous attempts to prove your authenticity as a living, breathing human being, you do have to hand over potentially some private data. But if we're going to stare directly into the orb, it's not going to stare back. It's going to take your biometric information. So how does that remain secure?
Yeah. So the company, I heard about this and I went, oh, hell no. Like, I was right there with everybody, like, no way am I going to let this thing take, capture my iris and then do whatever it wants with it. But then I went to the company. I did a huge deep dive for the past week on all of this technology. And it's looking for things like, is your face really 3D? Is there infrared heat? Is your iris a pattern of only a human iris would be? And have we ever seen this before? So once it figures all of that out, that's sort of the magic. I think of it like it's almost like a little crystal ball, but inside of it, instead of magic, it has this cryptography math. That's what's driving it. So it decides whether or not you're a human, sends that information to your smartphone, and then it immediately dumps all of that data. The company told us they don't keep any of that data. And then to go a step further with all of that, basically they not only dump it, but they encrypt it and they cut it all up. They chop it up. So what's left is like a digital eyeball or a digital barcode, sorry, for your eyeball that's encrypted. It's split into pieces and then it gets scattered across a decentralized network like a glitter bomb. So you can imagine, even if it does get hacked, what are they going to do with glitter that's spread out over the whole world? You can't like use that. It's not like a paper shredder where you can somehow piece that all back together and figure out who that person is. The company doesn't know who you are. They only know that you're a living, breathing human being. Now, will this keep that deep fake video that you saw with Donald Trump hanging out with aliens from happening? No, that'll still happen. But you'll know right away, are these real living, breathing human beings in this? You'll know when you go to a dating app whether the person you're flirting with is real. You'll know on social media whether the person you're talking to or who's, you know, sending you sexy pictures and trying to get your phone number is real. This will work in creating this kind of new trust layer foundation for the internet, as long as it's widely adopted, not only by you and me, but by these other big tech companies. So this is potentially a fundamental shift in, like, look, you guys can't grab our information and do what you want with it anymore. We need an internet. Yeah, one of the founders told me, you know, when the internet, the brilliant minds behind the internet created it, they forgot humans. They forgot to build for people. So this puts that people layer. And personally, I want to go back online and know that I'm dealing with other people and not bots.
Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today. Thank you for joining us on Technology Thursday.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Visa is unveiling an artificial intelligence-ready credit card and platform that enables AI agents to shop for and pay for things on your behalf. We're joined by Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And I seem to recall an old commercial for Visa that said, it's everywhere you want to be. And that seems to be the marching orders of the AI Visa agent.
Yeah, it's really interesting here that AI could potentially be used for transactions. It reminds me of what's going on with these credit card concierge services. You know how a lot of times they have a phone agent that you can call and you can maybe get help planning a trip or finding a hot restaurant reservation or concert tickets or even some kind of retail product. This is a technological extension of that. So it's still in the pilot stages, but the theory is that this could get to the point that you could tell this AI assistant, you know, hey, could you help me restock laundry detergent, or could you help me buy anniversary flowers for my wife or something like that? And it can actually complete the transaction with your permission.
And it seems like this would be a good place for AI to do its thing, because it can go through years, if not decades, of your old statements archived online. It knows where you shop. It knows where your most frequent transactions take place.
That's right. It kind of reminds me of what Amazon tried a few years ago with those dash buttons. Remember they had that thing where you could push a button and let's say it would restock your favorite laundry detergent or toilet paper. The idea was that you would put it somewhere in your house and then you would just hit the button when you need to restock, and then it was pre-programmed so that it would basically just replicate your last order. Now, maybe that was ahead of its time. That program was actually discontinued, but it's kind of the same theory. I feel like this could fit that sort of lather, rinse, repeat, like products that you're frequently ordering, or there could also be a little bit of thought to it, you know, in terms of trip planning or new clothing purchases or a birthday or holiday or anniversary gift for somebody. You know, that would be kind of cool if you can tell it, you know, hey, give me gift ideas for this person. Maybe you say a little bit about their age, their interests, there's other things related to them, and maybe you get some ideas generated. AI is not a be-all, end-all, but sometimes it's a good starting point. And if it can cut out some of the boring legwork, could be interesting.
Now, are there any potential downsides to this when it comes to the safety and security of your financial information, or the AI assistant making purchases without your knowledge?
In order for this to really catch on, the industry definitely has to have some guardrails in terms of approved payments and what happens with disputes. And you don't want this bot just running off and buying things willy-nilly. I mean, you definitely need to have some layer of approval. So I feel like they would definitely need to strengthen some of the guardrails there. I suppose some people might be concerned about the privacy of what you're ordering and how much you're spending, although clearly this would be an optional program. So I feel like, you know, some may be drawn to this, but it's got to work right and it's got to be proven out so that you're not getting erroneous charges or hidden charges or overspending or something like that.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com, based in New York. Thank you for joining us today.